This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome to This Week in the NFL. Heading into Week 7. Exciting Week 6. I'm your one of your hosts here, the Cowboy, as you all know. Joined by my esteemed colleague, as always, John D'Amato. John, what's the good word?
Hey, Cowboy. Great to talk to you. We got 60 minutes uninterrupted. We won't be delayed by any penalties or flags that'll slow us up. We'll plow through.
No phantom illegal hands to the face calls for our show?
Well, we're dealing with me. There'll be hands somewhere else. It won't be on my face. But
That's the point.
That's where I'll be.
Wherever it is. Wherever it is, they're calling it to the face, John. That's what I'm saying. Crazy week, and we're recording this on Tuesday night at 10:38 p.m. So, just digesting Monday Night Football, and luckily we had some big news today. I guess we can lead with that.
So, yeah, some hot trades. Cornerback market is on fire.
So the Rams, they placed Aqib Talib on injured reserve. They traded Marcus Peters for a bag of balls. And in the big move, they gave up two firsts and a fourth, I believe, for Jalen Ramsey of the Jags. So the Rams get who's probably the best cornerback in the NFL outside of New England right now. What do you think of the move?
Well, the Rams are acting like they should, like a team that lost the Super Bowl last year, and they're showing that they're gonna go for it every year. So Peters contract up; he's gonna be out next year. They obviously don't plan on re-signing him, and so they have Ramsey for the rest of this year and the year after. And if they like him and everything, they could re-sign him. So they got Ramsey for a long term. They figure they're not giving up. They figure the first round draft picks, if they get their stuff together, those first rounds will be low picks. Within the 20 to 25 range, which they could spare to give up. So it was a good move for the Rams. They had to shake things up. They're obviously struggling. They came out the box looking like they're ready to repeat. But a three-game losing streak changes a lot of things. They're sitting at 3-3 with two beasts in their division. So they had to do something. And this is a good start there, but they still need help with the offensive line, and they have other issues that we'll talk about.
I think they gave up a little much. I mean, that's a lot for a cornerback, right? Especially now you have to open the vault for him, right? So two firsts and 100 and whatever million dollars. It's maybe not that much guaranteed, but you know what I'm saying. A lot of money.
Yeah, if they re-sign him, sure.
I mean, if they gave up two first-round picks for him, they have to, right? No choice. You can't give up two first-round picks. And I mean, I would be surprised if he's not signed long-term by Sunday.
Yep.
Two first-round picks. Sitting at 3-3. It feels like a little bit of a desperation move to me. I mean, he's a great player. But in the NFL, I mean, two first-round picks is a ton. I mean, that's an absolute ton to give up for a position player. You know, for a non-quarterback. So we'll see what happens. I mean, to me, watching that team, you know, the last couple of weeks, you know, before this week, the defense was very clearly the problem. This week, not so much. So I think you pointed out an astute observation there, John, in that the Rams' offensive line is atrocious. Has been.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been kind of maybe covering for it with Goff just slinging the ball around and, I mean, you know, inefficient 400-yard passing games. But their offensive line is bad. And the 49ers, I mean, really, really beat the hell out of them. And the 49ers defense clearly is for real. But it was jarring to see anybody do that to the Rams. And I mean, that was really ugly, really, really ugly. The game was 7-0 and it was over essentially, because you knew the Rams couldn't do anything. But
yeah, they got their offensive line got old within 1 year. They went from being one of the top 5 or 10 in the league to this, they're playing bottom 5 or 10. They really struggled. It was one of those games where they couldn't even run a basic play, where there was 3-4 Niners right in the back, right in Goff's face.
Yeah, and I actually, the Rams scored very easily on their first drive, so it wasn't 7-0 and the game's over. So the Rams took it down, no passes, all runs, ran it right down their throats, scored on a little reverse to Robert Woods, and that was it for the offense, for the game, yeah. Basically. I mean, they got, what were they, 0-11 on something on third and fourth down? And, I mean, yeah. good for the Niners. The Niners look they're for real.
A new hot coordinator, Robert Saleh for the Niners, a defensive coordinator, is going to be a new hot coaching candidate.
He had some passion on the sidelines there. Absolutely. And that, like, I mean, it's a really nice little mix they have going now. And I thought they were going to win this game. And I really like kind of their ball control with some, razzle dazzle sprinkled in, because it's Shanahan, right? But just that three-headed running back, great tight end, probably the best tight end in football, in Kittle, kind of limiting Garoppolo to, you don't want Garoppolo back there throwing the ball 50 times a game, right? But he's,
you saw there was a brutal pick that even kept the Rams close in that game. So you see he's susceptible to that.
Correct. But I mean, they really looked the part with kind of a defense wins championship sort of deal. I mean, they're a nightmare for anybody right now.
Yeah, kind of old school defense and run the ball.
Yeah, and I like the multiple running backs.
That wins in December, yeah.
And all the guys are a little bit different, like Breed is a burner, Coleman's a little more physical, and Mostert is pretty quick, good pass catcher. So it's a really impressive win, really, really impressive win. I said I picked them to win the game. I didn't think they were just going to beat the living shit out of them like that. I mean, it was not really a game, right? I mean, it was only 20-7, but it was about as lopsided as a 20-7 game could be. Like, you never felt like the Rams were like in that game after halftime, and they have chance after chance after chance. The Rams defense actually played pretty good, and just they could not do anything. Very impressive, yeah. Very impressive win. You must have loved that game, John. That was right up your alley.
Yeah. I'm on the Niners. I wasn't on their bandwagon. I'm on them now, and yeah, they got the Redskins this week. So, looking at a 6-0 is a real good possibility.
I mean, it would be a monumental upset if they weren't 6-0. The Redskins, the Redskins got their first victory, stopping the mighty Dolphins on a 2-point conversion at the end of the game. So that I mean, I would be very, very surprised if San Francisco didn't go in there and just wipe the floor with them this week. Just completely wipe the floor with them.
Yeah, there's not going to be much home field advantage for the Skins. There'll probably be more 49er fans in that stadium.
All right, so we had some other exciting stuff. We'll talk about the London game. You have the surging Carolina Panthers force six turnovers, or six or seven, right? Was it six by Winston, seven total, I think?
That was some ugliness, early morning ugliness. And for the schedule makers, was there any need to schedule both Panthers-Bucks games on a national broadcast? They already played Thursday night. We didn't need to see both of those games in full.
The Panthers played pretty well in this game,
to isolate both of them. Yeah, well, Winston, famous Jameis, threw up some cookies and made that game non-competitive. Otherwise, it could have been close. It looked like the Panthers were going to run away, and then their poor Ray-Ray McLeod fumbled that punt and kept the Bucks in it, and then he wound up getting cut, poor Ray-Ray, so... That was the only thing that kept it close early. But Jameis was god awful, man.
It was a tough day for Jameis. Tough day at the office. The Panthers' pass rush, though, week in and week out, has been very, very good. McCaffrey didn't have a great game. The Bucs' run defense is excellent. They've shut him down twice. He got two touchdowns, I mean, it was, you know, he had 22 carries for 31 yards. I mean, that's awful. But they got it done. Kyle Allen has played well. He's 4-4-0. Cam is getting healthy. What are your feelings there? But I'll give you mine. So I think if it's the real Cam Newton who can run around and is not hampered in any way, if he is truly 100%, regardless of what Allen's done, I think you have to go back to him.
Yeah, but I agree 100%.
If he's stand in the pocket and sling at Cam Newton, or if he's compromised in any way, you give him all the time he needs to get healthy, because this kid has proven he can come in and lead the team to victory. 4-2 going into their bye week. Not bad.
I think I have to disagree on the second part. I think Cam plays as soon as he's ready. This Allen kid, he's going to get exposed eventually. He's more of a game manager type, doesn't turn the ball over. But when it's step up in competition and playoff time, you need somebody to make some plays. And especially, I think they're going to do whatever they can to get Cam in there for the following week versus the Niners, which has turned out to be one of the games of the year next week.
Yeah. But, he's got to be healthy, right? I mean, you can't – if it's the version of Cam that was out there in week one and week two, they're significantly better off with Allen. I mean, Cam was awful.
Yeah.
He's not a pocket passer. Yeah. I mean, Allen is accurate, and he is game managing to a point. But, I mean, you can't have a guy back there turn it over, especially against San Francisco with their pass rush. I mean, it could really be helpful to have mobile Cam, but not statue Cam.
Yeah, but they got the bye this week, and I have a feeling he's going to be in there for next week versus the Niners.
Well, I hope he's healthy if he is, but that has the potential to be a heck of a game. So we'll be looking forward to it. That could be your NFC championship game preview. So we had the Texans going to Kansas City. Neither one of us were on this one, John. The Chiefs, like the Rams, two straight losses. I really thought this was a get-right spot for them. They jumped out on them 17-3, and then didn't do much the whole rest of the game. They got Tyreek Hill back. He looked phenomenal. But it really looked like Mahomes tweaking his ankle again was really the kryptonite for that offense. Again, that mobility for him, which you don't really think of him as a running quarterback because he isn't, but he's got that little Brett Favre in him of the draw it up in the dirt and keep it alive with his legs and make the plays. And it seems like with that kind of aspect taken away, that he's human after all. And their defense is terrible. We've known that all year, right? That for 2 years, their defense is going to, you know, if they're not scoring 30 points a game, they're not going to win. And that's what happened here. Carlos Hyde just ran wild on them. The Texans played a good game. You know, they controlled the ball, which is what you have to do against the Chiefs. They controlled the clock with Hyde. Watson didn't make any mistakes. He ran for two touchdowns as well. And they got a nice victory.
Yeah, it was about the time of possession was about twice as much. Especially that second half, it seemed like they just held on to the ball and they wouldn't give it back. And excellent game plan by O'Brien using Hyde, as you mentioned, and also both of those tight ends were dominant. Fells and Ekins were dominating. They just got first downs whenever they wanted, and they kept the ball away from Mahomes, and they kept them out of the end zone just enough. And definitely a great performance by the Texans, and they got to be optimistic that them and the Colts are kind of separating themselves from the rest of the pack in that AFC soft. division.
Yeah, and I mean, fortunately for the Chiefs, their division is looking like a similar, like kind of an AFC East scenario this year, where they're so far and away the best team in the division that even a 10-6 would probably win the division by two games. But upcoming for both these guys, we have the Chiefs playing Thursday night. Thursday night in Denver. Denver coming off two wins at Los Angeles at the Chargers, and then shutting out the Tannehill/Mariota Titans in Denver this week. So they're coming in confident.
What do you call that better game? The Broncos-Titans was what game?
Piss break game of the week?
Yeah, oh, my God. there was some awful football there. The Broncos...
you didn't even like that one, huh? A lot of defense.
Nah, that wasn't defense. That was a lot of bad offense. I don't know so much of defense. Although, I'll give credit. The Broncos are too friggin' rough in the passer calls away from being 4-2. You know, not an excuse, but they're a tough out. They may give the Chiefs a tough game at 2-4, but just man, Flacco is just
Because Cortland Sutton's really making a leap. I mean, he looks like a real weapon out there, and
they're getting Sanders back possibly. Emmanuel Sanders might be back, but
it's just hard. He had to leave in the middle of the game this week.
It's just hard to believe you got one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time as your executive calling the shots there, and he only knows how to build a great defense, but he goes through a different quarterback every year, and one's worse than the next.
I know. Since Peyton left, I mean, it's like ugly and uglier, and I mean, and you could see this Flacco thing coming from a mile away. I mean, he's been washed up for 3 years. I don't know what else he was supposed to do. I mean, because Keenum was awful for them too. And it's not like the market was full of available quarterbacks. But you would think, I mean, even a guy like Tyrod Taylor, for example, right? He's definitely available, right? He's the backup. And you'd think of maybe a guy like that or anybody but Flacco. I mean, he's so bad. But with all that said, the Kansas City defense has a way of making everybody look good. Denver does have a good running game. With Lindsey Royce Freeman.
Sure.
They're both good. There is a path here for Denver to bleed the clock like the last two Chiefs opponents have done. They're built for it in that they have a defense that can get stops, especially with Mahomes compromised coming in on a short week, and with a good enough running game against that shit Kansas City defense, where I think that the pedigree is going to win out and the Chiefs are going to win the game. I do not think it's going to be easy. I think there's a real chance that this is up for grabs in the fourth quarter and Mahomes has to pull a rabbit out of his hat, and that, you know, Denver's really has a real path to victory in this game, and the blueprint's been laid out for them by the Colts and by the Texans.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be a close one, but the Broncos are staying at home, and the Chiefs got to travel to them on a short week. But I'm with you. I think the Chiefs pull out a close one.
And then the Texans. This is a potential game of the week right here. Houston at Indy. So what do you need here for your 8-8 tie?
I don't like how the one team has less games than the other. The Colts already had the bye and the Texans haven't yet. I feel the divisions they should all be even, have the byes at the same time. It's a little jumbled there, but the Colts coming off the bye at home, so only a 1-point favorite. The Colts had some momentum going before the bye. And I'll go with the home team here, and the Colts in a squeaker.
It's a tough game to call. I mean, the teams are pretty evenly matched, right? I mean, there are things the Colts do well, right? The Colts have a better line, obviously. Although the Houston line's been playing better, so Watson has been upright 2 weeks in a row now. Houston, pretty clear advantages at the skill positions, right? So I think the blueprint for the Colts here is kind of a similar strategy to what they employed against the Chiefs, with a little T.Y. Hilton in his career has absolutely destroyed the Texans. You should look up that. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's ugly, ugly. And if they can get him back, and you got to think he'll just have all the confidence in the world in this one. Here, let me see if I can pull it up here. I'm telling you. No, it only has it by years. Anyway, T.Y. Hilton historically has destroyed the Texans. I think he comes back, and I think he destroys them again. So I'm with you, John. The Texans have looked good last week. They're the kind of team that will look not as good this week. And that would put them at 4-3, the Colts at 4-2, and we're a little closer to your dream scenario in this division, which I'm rooting hard for.
The Titans and Jags got to pick it up.
They got time to split against each other.
Looking at this week, the Jags got the Bengals and the Titans are home versus the Chargers, so they should both be able to get to 3-4.
Man, good segue there, John. Good segue. Sunday Night Football, another one we whiffed on along with the rest of America. A home road game for the Chargers, which we knew. You know the Chargers don't have a real home field advantage, especially when it's kind of a national team like the Steelers.
Steeler Nation represented.
Having lived on the West Coast, there are a ton of Steelers fans on the West Coast. And
they're everywhere, yeah.
And they filled up that stadium. But what a brutal non-performance by the Chargers. This team was 12-4 last year. And I mean, the game scores 24-17. The game was not even anywhere near that close. It was 24-0. And the Chargers did some junk time work. I mean, to roll over and die against Devlin Hodges, the duck whisperer. The duck whisperer. And I mean, you know they can't throw. You know they can't throw. He threw for 130 yards. And how do you let Connor and Snell just like run wild all over you? And then, I mean, of that 130 yards, like at least 70 something of it was to Connor on little dump offs out of the backfield. How can you not stop that, is what I'm saying. How do you not force that kid to beat you over the top? Is it a bad game plan? Is it a bad team? I mean, it's just, and we'll get into their offense in a second, but what a disaster.
Yeah, the Steelers defense took, right from the start, they punched the Chargers right in the mouth, and they took over that game with the turnovers, and they gave Hodges short fields to work with. Bush was all over the place. Devin Bush.
He looked great. He did.
Looking like a tremendous, tremendous pick for the Steelers. And they just grabbed that game by the throat in the very first quarter and didn't let up. They didn't have to make Hodges work too hard. He managed the game. But for the Chargers, they got to look at the Giants' mistake with Eli, and they got to cut bait on Rivers sooner rather than later. Don't be like the Giants and wait 3 years too late. They should start looking next year and start looking to draft for a quarterback, because Rivers is showing a sign that he's kind of losing it a little bit, if not more than a little bit.
It's starting to look like a lost season for them. They have so much talent that you got to think they at least have the potential to turn it around. But, I mean, it's a must-win for them this week at Tennessee. Tennessee named Tannehill the starter today. I suppose that's an upgrade on Mariota, but it's not much of one, if it is one.
Oh, my God.
This team that just got shut out. I mean, I got to go with the Chargers, just based on talent. Tennessee sucks. And this is the kind of game Tennessee wins and the Chargers lose. But... But
yeah, that's the thing.
Is this team really going to get beat by Hodges? And then, so who did it's Flacco, right? Flacco, yeah. Hodges, and then fucking Tannehill back to back to back.
Yeah, we talked about them both. For those fans that are rooting for shitty teams that are rooting the tank, just remember that Winston and Mariota were the 1 and 2 picks in the draft, and next year they're going to be quarterbacking probably different teams. They might not even be starters next year.
I think Mariota's done as a starter. Winston, it's more like a decision making thing. Like he at least can move the offense. Like it. You know, it's more like a mental thing. I mean, Mariota, I just don't think is any good. I think he's just not a really good NFL quarterback. He doesn't have any real discernible skill that separates him.
Yeah, he's got some scrambling ability, but
but he's not like electric. He's kind of like Tannehill, which is not a compliment. Yeah.
Because he was at least stays away from the turnovers, but you know, with that you get 15 consecutive 3 and outs. So last week he was trying to force it, and after he threw a couple picks, it's like, you know, he went from 3 and outs to now turning the ball over.
Mariota, he's kind of like a poor man's Jacoby Brissett.
Oof.
He is, right? Brissett's better than him. Similar style of quarterback, but I would much rather have Brissett.
Yeah, right now Brissett's looking a lot better. Sure,
but so from what you were saying earlier, you like Tannehill to win this game. You're that down on the Chargers. I know we're both we message each other
about how terrible
the Chargers are.
Yeah, I mean that's the common theme that Tennessee sucks. I would say Tennessee is mediocre because once in a while they pull games out that you expect them to win. So. I'm not exactly confident picking them. This is going to be a shitbox 17-16 special that's going to come down to a kick, a one play here, a bad call by the ref. So it's going to be just one of those games, and we'll just lean to Tennessee to somehow get to 7-9, 8-8, and they'll pull the one out.
It's one of 3 4 o'clock games, so the other two are much better. You have the Saints at Chicago, and then the Ravens at the Seahawks.
Yeah, I got a doubleheader for. I got the Saints Bears. I don't think I'll be tuning much into Chargers Titans, but believe it or not, that's the only game that CBS is rolling at that time.
I don't know. The others are NFC, right? So they can't. Well, I guess they can.
Yeah, because we got the Jets on Monday night this week. So for the CBS game, that'll be and the Giants at 1. So the CBS game at 4, and that's the only one rolling.
Another great segue, John. How about them Cowboys? How about them? Woo! So, I think we can, we both have love for the Cowboys. We both think that, you know, gave them every benefit of the doubt, John, through this little skid. Said we're in a get right spot against the Jets. You know, no way they can lose that one, right?
The Cowboys
move the ball up and down and up and down and up and down the field the whole game long. But Sammy Darnold returns. Cowboys lose to the Jets 24-22. You have the Cowboys fan bitching and moaning at the end of the game there about the 2-point conversion that it looked like Witten may have been held. But they're conveniently forgetting the 17 fucking flags that were thrown on the Jets on that drive to get them the touchdown. It was 3 plays in a row. So one of them was on like 2nd and 20-something, right? The little illegal contact. And yeah, then the pass interference call was weak. So the refs, who did not have a good week, looked like they were trying to hand America's team one on a silver platter here. But the Jets came through, and a lot of, you know, you can see it, and this was a little bit of a trap game because, you know, a lot of people like the Jets at the beginning of the year, and they haven't had, you know, going from Darnold to, you know, Falk is, you know, it killed the whole offense. Darnold looked good. You saw the reason people like this team at the beginning of the year, and they played a good game. The Cowboys are a mess, though. I mean, and losing Amari Cooper like on the first play of this game really hurt them here. They don't have like another, you know, Gallup isn't ready to be a one essentially. So it was feed Zeke and it just didn't work out. What are you thinking about the NFC East? That could be, I mean, that's the worst division in football, John. I mean, they kind of have to say that, right?
Yeah, it's looking like that. The Eagles and Cowboys definitely having their struggles. The Cowboys, not that it's an excuse, two offensive linemen down, plus Cooper really hurt them. But you got to give the Jets credit. They held down Zeke to under 4 yards a carry.
Oh, yeah. He had to work got the ball
a lot. He had to work for his 100 yards.
And that was a great play. I mean, great throw by Darnold there to Robbie Anderson.
Such a big difference.
Yeah. Great play to Ryan Griffin there, too, to put them ahead for good. Big game, big NFC East game in the race to 9-7 to win that division.
Philly
at Dallas Sunday night, always a bloodbath. The Cowboys could really use Cooper in this game because as we saw last week, and I think I believe we talked about this that the Philly's pass defense is just god awful.
Awful.
I mean, they're similar. If you remember the Ravens last year, they were just phenomenal against the run. Like, you can't run on Philly at all. But, I mean, you don't have to. You just throw and throw and throw. I mean, Stephon Diggs partied like it was 2016. Destroyed them this week. I mean, just won them, beat them single-handedly. All the stuff about, you know, Cousins has silenced the critics. Two consecutive games, and I mean, I don't know. He did a little social media thing there, right? Where that'll get thrown. That's like his social media version of "you like that." So this whole, you know, what was it? The weak link, the weakest link that'll get thrown in his face the next time he sucks ass in prime time. the Eagles cut Zach Brown after he trashed Cousins.
Yeah,
we talk about it after the game. So it's like, but like without Cooper. Like, I don't know if the Cowboys can take advantage of that bad pass defense. It's like the Zeke running into that line. Like, that's not a recipe for success for them. If Cooper doesn't play, it looks like he's probably not going to play, I like Philly to go in there and win. If Cooper plays, I like Dallas because I think he'll have 200 yards against that awful, awful secondary.
I'm gonna lean towards the Cowboys to get it right, but I'm not a confident pick at all. But I want to discuss the kind of the knee jerk reactions. Like now it's Dallas Olsen to fire Garrett. We've reiterated this before. The midseason firings. Really, has there ever been a coach that took over in midseason and led his team to like the playoffs or? Or a Super Bowl or anything. Besides, when Pagano got sick, and I think that 1 year when that was different. But never somebody that gets fired. If you're a Cowboy fan, who do you want to replace him? Kellen Moore, he was playing a couple of years ago. He's his first year as a coordinator, and the offense isn't exactly rolling. So you can't give him. And you know, and the other experienced coach is the defensive coordinator, Marinelli. What was his record the last time he was a head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they can fire him now.
Do you remember? Do you remember what Marinelli's record was the last time he was a head coach?
I mean, he was the Lions coach, right? Was he 0-16? Yeah, did he have the 0-16 team?
Yes,
Harrington team?
Yes. You're correct. So 16 times 0 is 0. So
I'm with you. While they're still in contention, you can't fire him. They probably should have fired him after each of the last two off seasons, but they didn't. So if the shit really hits the fan and they're out of it, if they're 4-8 or something, then you can
you can understand.
You can't can him at 3-3 when you're still probably the favorite to win the division, right? I mean,
sure, yeah.
But I mean, and it's like things are so much more pronounced when they're bad in Dallas. It's almost like a New York kind of market, right? For where, I mean, everything, you know, Skip Bayless has a lot to do with it, but I mean, it's just like the sky is falling. And I didn't like too much what I saw out of Dak the past 2 weeks. That, and I mean, Philly certainly has their holes as a team. The secondary being the biggest one. I thought their offense played all right against Minnesota. Minnesota's got a tough defense. But I just think, like I said, I think without Cooper, Dallas, like, I think without Cooper, they're not built to just get into shotgun and just throw the whole game. That Prescott's going to make mistakes in that situation without Cooper, and it's going to be enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm disappointed with Dallas's defense. Last year, Smith and Van Der Esch and them guys were all over the place. They were all over the ball. But this year, not so much so far. They've kind of fallen off. Also, teams have realized they could pick on that weak link, which is Awuzie, that cornerback. He's been getting torched a lot.
Absolutely.
If Smith and Van Der Esch don't bring that rush and that attack style, and teams have been isolating that Chidobe Awuzie and exposing him.
Yeah, and I mean the other thing, John, is that, from like a coaching perspective, this is like, you know, this is like chess and, you know, checkers. I mean, Peterson's a good coach, good offensive coach.
Yeah,
especially.
But he struggled against Dallas.
Garrett's an awful.
But look at the last few games. Dallas actually had the advantage.
We're going to agree to disagree on this one. Similar to our Monday night game. I feel like I should get a victory for this one. So, Lions-Packers in Green Bay.
Here we go. This one we rail on the officiating. We're going to have the long segment on the officiating.
I'm not a rail on the officiating kind of guy, John. You know,
me neither.
I feel like
but
it kind of evens itself out. This game... I mean, the referees literally cost them the game. There's no other way. There's no other way to spin it. And I can understand, not the pass interference they didn't call on Marvin Jones, but those two hands to the face penalties on Trey Flowers, where he didn't have the hand to the face. It's like they did it once, and it was a huge play. It was 3rd and 15, right? He gets sacked. They call the illegal hands to the face, and he throws a touchdown pass, right? So that's a 7-point swing, obviously. The Lions would have gotten the ball back right there. And I'm on Twitter, and everybody's all over the officials about that call, right? Because it was so obvious on the replay that he didn't have the hands to the face. And so to have it happen again on the last drive of the game to ice it, it iced the game. So the Packers, again, 3rd down, about a little over a minute left. The Lions poised to get the ball back after the Packers kick a field goal. The Lions stop them, and they make the same exact call on the same guy. And again, this one was even more obvious that he didn't have him by the face mask. You just feel bad for Detroit, who is actually, you know, we shit on them at the, you know, consistently over the last couple of years, but they're a good team. I think they're a good team. I mean, they played like a good team would go, and they punched the Packers in the mouth right away. Their defense played good. Stafford's playing well. It's just a shame because they won that fucking game. They won the game, and they got it taken away from them.
Yeah, we crapped on him a lot, but we got to give him credit. They came out right away. They hit him with the flea flicker. It's like the Packers were on their heels the whole game, trailing the whole game. They hit him with that big flea flicker early, and then they got the ball again and hit another big pass, just 10-0, just like that. And it's still early in the season. I think Detroit's going to overcome this, and especially that's going to be a big revenge game when Green Bay has to come into Detroit and play them and. I mean, when Green Bay has to go into Detroit, sure, and the Lions are going to get their revenge in that game. But those calls had nothing to do That's what's frustrating is when they make holes like that have nothing to do with the play. Whether the guys have the face, it's not like the guy was getting to the quarterback and pressuring Rodgers or sacking him and causing him to miss the throws. Rodgers was missing the throws, and the guy, the hands to the face, it has nothing to do with the outcome of the play. That's what's so frustrating. I think the league's gonna have to sit down then next year and make certain plays, just 5-yard penalties and not automatic first downs.
I don't know how they make that call on the last one.
Yeah,
I mean, they know that it's game over, right? I mean, yeah. It's game over if you make that call. So you better be fucking sure. And it was just awful.
And also they're gonna have to look at like plays where it's like 3rd and 30 and a guy tugs on a jersey a little and they give an automatic first down. A lot of plays they're gonna have to change up the rules where it's just give them the 5 yards and do the play again, but not cut out this automatic first down nonsense. And there was a thing where the Bakhtiari even admitted it, the guard for the Packers, that he like lobbied for the Colts. He said the flowers was grabbing his grill the whole game, and he went to the refs to lobby for him, and I guess they did a couple makeup calls because he was crying and saying the guy was doing it the whole game.
Yeah, still, and I mean at the end of the day, right? The Lions kicked a bunch of field goals. They couldn't put it in the end zone.
Prater was outstanding.
They should have been ahead by more, right? So
not to crap on Stafford. That first when they hit that flea flicker, that big first play, and they got it down to the 15, and then you got Green Bay on your heels, and then the next play, Stafford first down, he fumbles the snap, and then on third down he falls over his own feet, and there's nobody around him. He gets up, there's a receiver wide open, and he throws it 3 feet in front of him, so they got to settle for the field goal. Not to crap on Stafford, but there's stuff like that. Yeah, they could have really.
I mean, you had like Hockenson drop that touchdown.
Yeah, that too.
That was a tough one.
Yeah, but still, this is one instance where the griping about the refs is warranted.
Agreed. So we have these teams this week. We have
Vikings going into Detroit.
Very good game. Very, very good
game.
For
the first time all year, I'll roll with the Lions.
Uh-oh. Put an L. Give him the L. Give him the L right now. Before we get off the referees, I will say about Matt Patricia, he did like the opposite of Sean Payton. So if you looked at Patricia's comments today.
He said, we're on to the Minnesota. Right?
Essentially, right? I mean, he said.
He followed his own boss. Yeah, he followed his own boss.
If you're going to rely on the official, if you go through a game and are relying on the officials to tell you whether or not you won, I don't really think you're going to turn out in a favorable manner more times than not. So took the high road, and I give him credit for that. He didn't.
Yeah, me too. He's winning me over, Matty boy. He's winning me over.
And that's a very good game. That's a very good game. I think it's got real potential. The Lions defense played really well. And has played really well all season. So I think you have real potential in this one for Cousins' little streak of excellence to come to a grinding halt. And I also like the Lions to win at home. So we'll see. It's a kind of game if Minnesota's got the personnel, right? And they could be like a post-hype sleeper where when everybody fucking finally gave up on them is when they actually when the light bulb came on. But this is the kind of game historically that Minnesota loses. So I'm gonna go with the Lions.
I always give the Vikings a fighting chance because outside of Cousins, their front four, both offensive and defense, are one of the best in the league, and their position players when you got Thielen and Diggs. So I always give them a chance. It's just Cousins is the zero factor.
Right, and then the Packers have a. Apparently is a tough game. So we have the Raiders coming off the bye. Johnny Gruden with 2 weeks to prepare. What could be more fearsome for Green Bay? In Green Bay. The Packers down to me and you running around out there at receiver, which hurts them. Coming off a Monday night game, so a short week, and again with the Raiders, 2 full weeks to prepare. The game's in Green Bay, so this is Gruden's chance, right? If they're for real, if they're a playoff team, this is an upset that they spring, right? It's all set up for them. There's injuries on the other side, the short week on the other side. They've had all this time to get healthy and prepare. They've got nothing on their mind but Green Bay for the last 2 weeks. Do you think he gets it done?
Nah, I think the Pack is going to pull it out. That Rodgers lobbied for that Lazard kid to play because he was frustrated with everybody else dropping balls left and right.
It was really ridiculous.
That Shepard kid might have got cut. A bad fumble, and then he falls on his face unless the ball hit him in the head leading to an interception. Yeah, he might have got cut right in then. But Rodgers lobbied for that Lazard kid, and the kid is huge, 6'5", 220. And that was
good.
That was a that was a great play. And also Jones dropped a big touchdown pass and caused Williams to get in there.
We know all about that one.
Leave your fantasy problems behind. But I think the Packers are going to get right. They're going to realize that they got lucky and they're going to straighten themselves out and win convincingly like they should over the Raiders.
All right. Here's what I was going to say. I think it goes one of two ways. I think it's either a Green Bay just kind of pounding the Raiders into submission, right? Just beating them bad, kind of a blowout. Where everyone's like, oh, I can't believe we thought the Raiders were decent. So I think it's either that or I think if it's a close game, I think the Raiders are going to win. If it's a close game.
Not really. The Packers don't really blowing out the teams this year. You know, they got issues, like I said, with their receiving core.
Oh, agreed. I mean, they have issues, but I'm going to pick the Packers in a walkover. I'm doubling down one more time on the Raiders actually being shitty. If they win this week, you got a believer here, John Gruden. But I still think it's possible you go 3-13. So, so we will see. But I like the Packers. The Packers big with a Derek Carr throwing at least one pick six. John, we had some other interesting stuff. So we've talked about a lot. How about the Saints Jaguars game?
Saints and Bears. Saints and Bears.
I know. Well, they played the Jaguars this on week six.
Oh, the last week's game. Sure.
Yeah. So defensive tussle. The Minshew magic was gone. The Saints defense is for real. I think they've proven that. You really have to be looked. So the Saints defense won them that game, right? Because the Jags D played well. Bridgewater came back down to earth in Jacksonville. Saints defense won the game. The Saints defense played very well. Setting up.
Marshawn Lattimore shut down those hot Jaguar receivers.
Shark. Yeah. Setting up, like you just mentioned, Saints Bears in what really looks like a real defensive struggle. On paper, in Chicago, man, I can't. You got to think the Bridgewater thing's gonna impact them at one time. They historically are not great on the road in outdoor stadiums, although they did win in Jacksonville. But I do believe in the Bears, specifically their defense, and coming off a bye, that I think the Bears are gonna win a close one here. I think it's gonna be similar to that Jacksonville New Orleans game, especially Kamara. New Orleans' biggest, him and Thomas obviously are 1-1A as offensive weapons, but he's got battling sort of a high ankle sprain. He says he thinks he'll be ready, but he was limited very clearly by it last week. And I think to beat that Bears team in Chicago, you kind of need all hands on deck on offense. So I like the Bears maybe like 17-13, something along those lines. What are your thoughts?
Daniel is playing for the Bears, right? Trubisky's not back yet.
Oh, I mean, that's not confirmed. They don't know. Oh,
okay.
I believe that it's going to be Daniel, but it could be Trubisky.
Yeah, I'm gonna roll with the Saints. They got some mojo going with Teddy B's gonna manage the game and stay away from the larcenous Bears defense turnovers, and I look for the Saints to pull out a close one.
All right, well, we'll agree to disagree there. I mean, if they win that game, man, I mean they're starting to kind of run away and hide, right?
Not really. The 49, they still got two games. Did they play the 49ers? Or?
I mean, from just a divisional perspective, but
yeah, they have to have some tough games on the schedule. But yeah, I don't see anybody. I'm saying that no, the Panthers. They still got the games with the Panthers.
They do. 6-1 is a heck of a start. So they do. They play. They play the 49ers in New Orleans in December. So. Schedule looks pretty good for them. At Chicago, then home for Arizona, bye week, home for Atlanta.
Wow.
At Tampa, should be another win. Then home for the Panthers, at the Falcons. I mean, that's a real nice five-game stretch for them. I mean, really, the way the Falcons are playing. I mean, Carolina's really the only difficult game in that stretch. Then it gets a little tougher. They close out with home for San Francisco, home for the Colts, at the shitty Titans to game the Titans to win, and then at Carolina to close out the season.
So this is a game they could actually afford to lose, but I still say they pull it out over the Bears.
All right. Well, that'll be an interesting one, John. What else you have? Baltimore at Seattle. It's another nice game.
Man, Seattle 5-1. They could easily be 1-5. So they've been winning games on the razor's edge.
You know, that's what having a guy like Russell Wilson will do, right?
Yeah, they pulled that Browns game out the hat.
Did they pull it out the hat, or was it Cleveland?
Just self-destructing.
Just being Cleveland.
That was another game. There was a few calls that could have went either way.
Agreed. The Browns, though, do look like a bit. I mean, Mayfield just makes too many mistakes, right? I mean, they really should have won. They really should have won that game.
The receivers didn't give him. You know, they had their hands on some balls that deflected.
Yes. Odell had a better game this week, but he did have a couple of drops again. But, I mean, at 2-4, two games back already of the Ravens, I mean, the Browns are in big trouble. Let's be honest about it, right?
Yeah, if you look at the second half, they got a real soft second half. If they could fight to 3-5 or 4-6, they got some easy touches that second half of their schedule. So I wouldn't count them out yet, and I don't think the Ravens are that good where they're going to run and hide. But as far as this game, I'd like to go with the Ravens, but I think the Seahawks are going to pull out another close one.
The game's in Seattle, I believe, right?
Yeah, 4:00, 4:25 in Seattle.
Tough to go against the 12th man there.
Plus, the Seahawks got that running game rolling. We're Carson and the boys. So
it is the Ravens defense hasn't been very good. They've been sneaky bad, as they say.
I mean, maybe Marcus Peters will help him out.
I mean, he's not going to hurt, right? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me for him to come in and be very good. I mean, Lamar Jackson's incredible, by the way. I mean, he had 152 yards rushing.
Yeah, they had to work too hard versus.
I know it was the Bengals, but that's a very impressive performance. Man, this is like one of those games where I think a lot of people are going to be on the Seahawks, and you know, I'm going to change my pick. I'm changing my pick. I don't think Seattle's like a real 6-1 team. I think it's one of these games where, you know, the road teams have done so well this year too. Ravens. Ravens by a knife's edge.
It's going to come down to a field goal, a call, a play, just like 80% of these games. It's going to come down.
And I'd be remiss not to talk about Pats. The Giants put up a nice little fight on Thursday night. Kept it close.
You can't beat the Patriots turning the ball over four times and then giving up a block punt. The guy that got punked and that backed into his own kicker got nicely cut. So you did us a favor there. But it just proves that the Pats, you got to have backups. You could cry about injuries all you want, but Bolden is like their fourth to the string running back, and he winds up scoring a touchdown. He winds up causing a block punt, and the Giants' fourth string running back, gets a big fumble to lead to a touchdown. So you have to have depth. You can't cry about injuries.
The G-men have the surging Cardinals coming to town. Cardinals back-to-back wins against the Bengals and the Falcons. It's actually a pretty interesting game. It's a good get-right spot for Daniel Jones, who after his week one heroics, or his first week of heroics, has kind of come predictably a little bit based on the schedule, kind of crashing down to earth. But the Cardinals' defense is nothing if not very, very burnable. So this could be a good little confidence-boosting game for Daniel Jones. With that said, Kyler Murray has been playing very well and will probably severely torch the Giants' defense. So you're looking at what's probably going to be a high-scoring game, John. You like the Giants at home in this one? I think Saquon might be back.
I do. I like how the Giants' defense played against your boys. Brady had zero touchdown passes.
They did. They at least put up a fight.
Yeah, I like they're getting a little pass rush going. They're up there in sacks. Golden, Dexter Lawrence has been very impressive on the defensive line. That was one of the big rookies that Mr. Criscolo picked in your when you left me and abandoned me. Did the NFL preview on the other network. he called out Dexter Lawrence, and so far he's been coming through. So the Giants defense has been doing some things. I think they'll come up with stuff to stop Murray a little.
All right. Should be a good game. And then Monday Night Football, Pats at Jets, a game that became a little more interesting with the way the Jets played last week. Patriots, as you mentioned, are pretty banged up. Do you see the Jets giving him a game here?
Yes, I do. Greg Williams has got his defense rolling. They might be getting C.J. Mosley back, which would be huge for them. And they've been fighting. Even those games where they were stuck with Luke Falk playing, the defense still kept them in the game. And they're looking like a dominant force. And the Pats got their struggles with the lack of receivers, etc. So I see this one being close. Unfortunately, it'll be the usual result, but I think it's going to come down to it's going to be a field goal game. The Pats are going to have to pull it out late.
I like the Pats by double digits, but kind of a game that's close that they take over in the fourth quarter. I do like the way the Jets looked this week, but this is not the Cowboys coming into town. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, it's amazing though when you have Darnold instead of a quarterback who should be cut, it picks up all of a sudden the offensive line picks up and learns and actually blocks a couple guys and they make a couple plays. It's a big difference.
It is. It's just like the Patriots defense is extremely good, right? Really, really best defense in football. So
yeah,
that's what.
But it's also an example. It's an example of how the schedule rolls out. Like we could go at the beginning of the year and say, oh, win, loss. Like take the Eagles and the Cowboys. The Eagles played against Luke Falk, and by the time it got to the Cowboys Jets in the schedule, they get
against it's a different
Darnold,
team. So it's a different team.
Yeah, it's when you play teams, it makes a big difference when you're looking at the schedule. that's why it's kind of, you know, it's a little waste of time to go, the last five games they play this team, that team, that team. You never know who's going to be injured and et cetera. So it's a big difference.
Couldn't agree more, John. So, John, I think we covered just about everything here. You want to talk about any of your shows real quick?
As usual, I have the Extreme Three-Way Dance ECW show with the King and the Queen of PTBN. I did a Pop Goes to the Movies with the boss, Andy, talked about the Joker. We got a 1978 year on Pop out there. We talked about your Red Sox choking, and that's about it for now.
All right. Well, I can tell you everything else we have going on here, which could include something that you just talked about. So here over on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed, we have our weekly shows, as always. JT and Leanne are here with an emergency Pop Goes to the Couch, talking Jersey Shore, including Ron Ron's arrest, Jenny being shitty, and more. The Hard Traveling Fanboys continue their annual Walking Dead month with guest David Sunday as they discuss the Season 10 premiere episode. As we are in October, Scott continues his look at the classic Universal Monsters in the latest edition of Pop Goes to Classics with 1933's The Invisible Man. DC For You kicks off a month of DC Comics best horror offerings with a list of Russell and Todd's favorite scary DC stories, plus a look at the Keanu Reeves Constantine film from 2005. I think I mentioned this before, but I like Constantine. Good flick. Your favorite favorite sports show that you're listening to right now, This Week in the NFL. We're here every week, so please keep tuning in. Siblings Kevin and Mary host the Brother-Sister Rewatch podcast. On episode 19, they bring you The Office Season 3, episodes 9 and 10, including a Benihana Christmas. What better Christmas is there than a Benihana Christmas? On Sunday Groove, David welcomes Tim Capel back to the show to discuss the 80s song tournament and other 80s music they love. Andy, Scott, Dr. G, and D'Amato are back with The Year in Pop, where they discuss the sports, news, and pop culture of 1978. How'd that one go, John?
Excellent. Are you a National Lampoon's Animal House fan, or is that a...
Of course.
That came out in 78. Yes.
Pop Goes the Movies, as John mentioned, looks at the controversial Joker film. Join D'Amato and Andy as they look at DC's latest. Controversial. We'll have to get into that some other time. I didn't think it was super controversial. Anyway.
They're expecting the shootings, et cetera, which hasn't come forth. So I guess that's the only controversy.
Got it. Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament is concluded with Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses being crowned the champion. We'll be announcing our next tournament on the next episode of the Place to Be podcast on October 14th.
It was announced.
So that was yesterday, John. What is it?
Yes, we're having a Greatest Sitcom of All Time Tournament.
There we go. So should we just crown Alf now, or do we have to go through all the rigmarole?
I have a feeling a show about nothing is going to win in a landslide, but hopefully I'm wrong. Sweet Child of Mine was a nice surprise.
A show about nothing. Yeah. Seinfeld?
You're pretty good. You're pretty quick on the uptake there. That's why you're my host.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good. What about Cheers? I love Cheers.
Yeah.
No?
Best of all time.
So Cosby, Cosby Show, but obviously there's some...
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a sleeper.
It's just got some negative connotation to it now because of old Bill and the...
It could be
the roofies. You know, I don't know if you remember this show, John, from the 80s. I don't even know if it'll be in the bracket. Do you remember the show Sledgehammer?
Oh, of course. Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
So I was born in 79, but... I fucking love that show. I must have been 8 or 9 years old when it was out.
And hilarious.
Me and Senior would watch Sledgehammer every week. So I'm lobbying right now for Sledgehammer to at least make it onto the bracket. What are they going to do, like 500-something shows?
I can't believe you pulled that one out. Me and you might be the only ones that know about that. It's hilarious. Trust me, I know what I'm doing. I have a DVD of both seasons.
Nice, see, John. That's why we get along so well. Great taste.
Yes.
I'm going to predict right now that Seinfeld doesn't win. You heard it here
all
first.
All right.
You heard it
good,
here first. I think it's I like Seinfeld, but I wouldn't call it the greatest sitcom of all time. And I think it's got a big audience, but I think there's a lot of people like me who
backlash, yeah.
Who appreciate it, but who maybe it's not their single favorite show.
So you would go with Cheers.
Cheers.
That would be your number one?
I have Friends. Right? I mean, Friends was a huge hit. How about MASH?
Oh, boy. I'm not with you on the Friends end or the MASH.
Really? I'm just thinking of big.
Ooh.
That'd be the big, big, big hits, right? Because it's got to be a big, big hit that's
going
to work.
Nah, but sitcom, I'm going for the laughs, the funniest.
Married with Children.
I didn't get any broken ribs. Yeah, that's pretty good.
The Simpsons, right? That would be another potential.
Yeah.
No?
Maybe not best. We'll talk about a number one.
Lucky Louie?
it had a short run. It was a pretty good one.
What are you thinking, John? I'm throwing them all out here. Give me one or two.
I'll get dinged for being the old man, but Happy Days and The Honeymooners would be on my...
What was it? Happy Days? What was the other one?
The Honeymooners.
Oh, nice. To the moon. To the moon. How about Family Ties? I bet that'll be in there. Growing Pains, that's another good one.
Didn't bring too many laughs.
First and Ten. the juice is loose. All right.
Curb your enthusiasm also.
I know,
contender, I'm sure.
So that could split the vote a little bit too, right? Because it's kind of like the same show as Seinfeld.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting.
I'm controversial positions right now. You're trying not to. I know you. Yeah, I have the luxury of only having to do this show. You have to go face other people, so I'm with you.
Yeah, nah, it's good. We already had like a 5-minute debate. I'm sure once the tournament gets rolling, there's gonna be hot debates in the chat, etc. So
yeah,
it's all good. That's
my dark horse.
I don't even know if it made the nominations list, but. We'll have
all
to
right.
sneak it in there.
All right, so moving on. Check out a brand new podcast feed brought to you by our very own Jennifer Smith. The Jenny Position can be found on Podbean, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher app. It will be the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, and lots of new content. For the month of October, Pleased to Be Nation is holding our first annual Halloween Movie Challenge. We're giving you suggestions on what movies you should watch leading up to All Hallows Eve. And when you do, go on social media and let us know by using the hashtag PTBN Halloween Movie Challenge. But why stop there? Every time you watch a scary or silly horror movie or special, let us know and we'll add it to our list. Over on the wrestling feed, PTBN Wrestling Feed, Chris and Devin are back to break down the latest WWE pay-per-view, Hell in a Cell, on PTBN's Instant Reaction Show. On the Place to Be podcast, JT and Scott begin a new decade as Steve Bennett joins them for the 11590 MSG House Show. I believe that was not the latest Place to Be podcast. John, what happened on the latest one? Do you have any?
Yes, Royal Rumble 90 with Todd Weber, the manager.
Thank you very much, my friend. On the latest PTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance, woo! JT, John, and Jenny continue their ECW adventure with When Worlds Collide. On main event number 135, Scott, Nate, and Steve welcome Jordan Duncan to talk about the past 2 weeks of programming, including AEW, NXT, and SmackDown. It's October Guest Fest on Row 1, Seat 1, as Ben invites a slew of guests, including Excite Wrestling and the best independent wrestlers on the circuit. Don't forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture. But don't forget about veteran columns like every Wednesday we've got the most interesting and unexpectedly funny stories on the World Wide Web in Glenn's Weekly Walk. For college football fans, Scott Criscolo and Logan Crossland have their weekly campus hot takes, looking back at the previous week and looking ahead to the biggest matchups. Catch their weekly column every Tuesday afternoon, And finally, if you're doing shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. Check out our social media pages and message board over at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our greatest wrestler ever, pay-per-view, and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. That about sums it up for what we have going on here, John.
Get your hotcakes.
Get your hotcakes, exactly. So, we'll be tuned in Thursday night, Kansas City at Denver, and we'll be tuned in Sunday. We'll definitely be tuned in Monday, so... As I always say, we look forward to conversing with everybody. I know I'd like to give a special shout-out to Senior, as he is now a regular listener of the podcast, now that I've taught him how to download the PTBN pop feed on his phone. We got that done, and he's listening all the time now. So, Senior, enjoy. Please feel free to call us out for things that you think we're getting wrong, and we can't wait for you to join us on the show. Am I right, John?
Oh, yeah, he's going to keep us on our P's and Q's. So.
Absolutely.
But those hot Patriot takes are coming.
Can't wait. Always like a pleasure.
Like we don't get enough of them from you.
All right. So, for John, I'm the Cowboy. Everybody enjoy this week in football, and we'll talk next week.
Yes, sir.
Later.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.